From the sound bites for this particular Saturday, we are live broadcasting on Saturday, December 2nd, 2000. I'm Bob Smith with Dave Enright and soon to be joined by Steve Ray. Nick Francesco, unfortunately, not able to be with us this week. We'll tell you about that in a little bit, but we expect Nick to be back next week. And, of course, we expect to be having you online and answering all of your computing questions. And all you have to do to ask them is dial us up at 263-9994, area code 716. Our lines are open right now. We'll be ready to answer your questions in just a few minutes after we cover the computing news that affects you most during this week on this edition of your Computer Users Group of the Air, Soundbites. You are listening to Soundbites at WXXI Rochester, WEOS-FM Geneva, and out on the World Wide Web at www.soundbites.org. I'm Bob Smith.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And Steve Ray will be joining us, we expect, momentarily. Nick, unfortunately, will not be able to be with us today.
Yeah, I hope he's doing okay.
Bit of an accident, unfortunately, at Nick's other business, but we hear he should be okay and should be joining us next week. But meanwhile, let's have a look at what's going on this week. And David begins with more security flaws in the news, denial of service, possible weaknesses in a lot of websites,
you know what, these people,
and more.
These people definitely have too much free time. You can sit there and devote so much time to creating stupid, and the only other word for it is asinine, viruses that all they do is create havoc and mess people's lives up. You know, it's like, get a life. But they just had another one. McAfee has it out on their site. It's called the WP/Prolin, P-L-I-N-M-M, virus. And what happens, folks, is it's a medium to high-risk virus. And again, gee, guess what? It goes through Outlook. And basically, you get this email message from a friend. The subject title says, a great shockwave movie. And the body says, check out this new Flash movie that I just downloaded. It's great. Bye. And you see an attachment called creative.exe or creative.zip. Do not open it, view it, or do anything else, because what it does is the minute you do, it turns around, especially if you're using Outlook, turns around and spreads it to everybody else in your email list. So definitely be on the look for this and just trash it. There is an update up on McAfee for this, and I'm assuming Norton has the same thing. And again, get a life.
Here we go again.
Well, they've done a study, and you know, we've always thought that these kids that are creating the viruses are just young teenagers.
Right.
Well, contraire. They've found that the average age group now for doing viruses is anywhere between 16 and, 30 years old. I mean, some of these folks that are really geniuses are sitting there coming up with these viruses. So it's not some little Johnny, you know, hack kid in the back room creating this. These are some well-educated adults that are out there, nothing better to do, and they wreak havoc.
They have some real personal problems to deal with, don't they?
Definitely. If they could put that energy into other uses, I mean, you know, they'd be a hell of a lot richer than creating havoc, you know, like they are right now.
That's what. How
it's sad. It's really sad, you know.
And meanwhile, here's some bad news too. We haven't had any problem with it yet, but a denial of service, apparent flaw in a lot of the software that's running web servers, despite the fact that nobody's reported an attack yet. This has got to be worrisome to folks who are webmasters.
Yeah, it says security consultant BlindView Corporation has announced a widespread flaw in the way that the server handles internet traffic could result in a so-called denial of service attack, similar to the ones that plagued the web last Friday. The idea is nothing new. Send data to a server in a certain way so that the computer reserves memory and processor time for the connection. And repeat many times, many times, many times. When the server runs out of memory and slows down the crawl, certain functions stop to work. And, you know, again, it's just idiots out there with nothing better to do, you know, than to create havoc.
Yeah. Isn't that heartwarming that people are spending their time so creatively? Meanwhile, here's something that's kind of interesting and maybe a little bit sad, or it may work out. The iMation SuperDisc. That's been a very interesting alternative to the Zip Drive for quite a while. apparently it may not be around much longer, at least as we know it today. The optical drive sales, of course, they're building. That's cutting back sales at iMation. And they're going to pull back out of the market the current iMation SuperDisc. There is maybe some light at the end of the tunnel, though, in that Panasonic, the manufacturer of the disc for iMation, is rolling out a higher capacity half-height model that's going to hold, instead of 120 megabytes capacity on a single disc the size of a floppy, 240 megs.
Yeah.
So that could be some good news coming out of the bag.
But you know what? That's where it's, again, something new, too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Zip and, iOmega and NEC both come out with their Zip drives, which are either the 100 meg or the 250 meg platform. And they were very aggressive getting out there, making them good marketing, and getting them out to people where even like gateways now quite often have a 100 meg zip as part of their platform. And you can even get that in replacing your 3.5. Most folks are getting both a 3.5 and some form of zip to, you know, move data off. The other drives, that, you know, 120 meg, they just didn't market. iOmation didn't market it quite, you know, the way they should have. Otherwise, I think it would have been a bigger thing. It goes back just like IBM. IBM came out with the idea of a 2.88 floppy. You know, and it's been out there for years, but it just never caught on. Gee, why? Because they didn't market it or try to, you know, promote it to their vendors, the major people like Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, Gateway, you know, to try to promote them to get that product out there. They're just not doing it.
It's too bad because this was actually a more reliable product, a more reliable piece of goods than the Zip drive is, too.
Well, when the Zip first came out, you know, the click of death.
Oh, boy.
And everything else.
Dave, I've often meant to ask you about this. Is that as much of a problem with the current generation of Zip disks and Zip drives? Is that pretty much in the past?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, those Zip drives, I mean, even the one that I have, is I've got both a 100 and a 250 meg portable. And they get banged around quite a bit. And they just hold up. They've improved greatly, and this was the other thing. They saw a flaw, they corrected it right away, and now they're the hottest thing since, butter on bread.
Now, looking at the Apple world, we do want to pass along this brief piece of news, and that is, it's just a rumor at this point, or maybe a little bit more than a rumor, since it's being reported reliably by a number of sites, including Macworld. Apple is apparently taking a fresh look at the G4 Cube, which has been a hot product, but has tailed off in recent weeks. And it seems what they're doing is seriously thinking about revising it specifically to provide more room for upgrades and for additional features. Because one of the big strengths of the PC and of other Macs has been that you can add functions, you can add cards to it, you can upgrade it easily. The G4 Cube, unlike even other G4 machines on the desktop, is not very friendly or conducive to that compared to most of the machines we're used to dealing with lately. So it looks like there are going to be some changes, more expansion slots, more different functions that are going to be built into future iterations of the Cube. No announcement yet, but watch for it. And that'll wrap up this week's Computing News on Soundbites. You are listening to Soundbites, WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, on the World Wide Web at www.soundbites.org. Normally, of course, we're also heard and seen on City Cable 12 on your Time Warner cable system and on Big TV, WBGT channels 40 and 26. However, we're not on television this week and next week because of some special production projects at our master control station and its sister station, WXXI TV 21. But we will be back before Christmas. You'll be seeing us on the tube as well as coming through your radio or over the internet. So fear not if you like to watch us as well as listen to us. And if you like to listen to us, we're here. And we'll be here every week as always here on Soundbites. And call in with your questions. It's as easy as calling in at 263-9994, area code 716. I'm Bob Smith with Dave Enright and a full bank of calls. And Steve Ray, ready to answer your Mac questions as well. So whatever you got, we've got the people to answer it for you. We're going to go to the telephones right now, and we will hear, first of all, from Art, calling us from Brighton, New York. Art, you are on the air, and welcome to Soundbites.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Bart.
You're my court of last resort.
We'll try.
Gee, thanks.
Well, I just want to let you know.
I really feel loved.
Well, it means you've got the best information around.
We're his last best hope, I guess.
He's really trying to dig himself out of this one. Keep digging.
Let's hope that's what he
said. I can't defrag my C drive. And I've been through the scan disk. I even did a surface scan. I've shut down all the programs that show running in the background.
Have you tried doing it out of the DOS prompt?
Or even in safe mode?
You can't do it out of the DOS prompt. It doesn't recognize that as a... It says you have to be in Windows mode.
Yeah, there's
Windows 98 at least.
Yeah, there's a DOS version of Defrag and a Windows version of Defrag, and later versions of Windows only come with a Windows version.
Yeah.
Try doing it in safe mode.
I tried that too.
What's the problem that it won't finish? Does it say there's some...
It throws the bits around and then it gets to 1% and it drops back again. And the anomaly is that I have a D drive and it works fine on that.
Is that a separate hard drive or a partition on your first...
It's a separate hard drive.
Usually Windows safe mode is enough.
Yeah. Safe mode, you have to see it fail on that.
Yeah.
So it gets it 99% done, and then the last 1%, it just won't do?
No, it does the first 1% and never goes beyond it. It drops back to zero before... I've tried this before with programs running in the background, and it says, now we've tried it 10 times. Do you want to shut something down and try again?
Yeah, now...
what about the virtual swap file? Does that run in safe mode?
I haven't tried.
If the swap file is still running, Windows could be accessing it and then making Defrag start over.
Mm-hmm.
You can try turning that off.
How do I turn that off?
In the device manager under performance under virtual memory.
Okay.
Windows will complain about you turning it off.
Yeah, it'll say, you sure you want to do this? Are you really sure you want to do this?
But actually, after you defrag and then turn it back on again, the virtual swap file will be one contiguous block of space, which should make it run even faster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm not in danger of messing things up if Windows doesn't want to do it.
No.
Okay, and to do that, you go into...
Right-click on my computer.
Right.
At the Performance tab and the Virtual Memory button.
Yeah, it's third button over.
Okay.
Of course.
Close that down and then try it again.
Right.
I'll do that, man.
Okay.
Thanks for
your help. Art. Best of luck to you. Thanks for calling in. 716-263-9994. Get you on board Soundbites. And we're going long distance next to Becky in Seneca Falls, listening to us on our Geneva affiliate, WEOS-FM. Becky, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you all?
Doing great.
Okay. My question has to do with... I have an iMac, and I also have a Mac G3, and they're at two different locations. But I use the same ISP for both.
Mm-hmm.
The iMac, which is located in my home, constantly gets disconnected. It doesn't matter if I'm on Internet Explorer or on one of the Messenger things. I'll be going along, and boom, I'm disconnected. For a while, I thought it was the ISP, but my other computer in my shop, which has the same dial-up number, I don't get disconnected. So I'm wondering, what should I be doing?
It's probably something in the phone lines themselves.
You think?
Typically with residential customers, they've run out of phone lines, so they're doing what's called a SLIC, which transmits several phone calls on a single wire.
Mm-hmm.
And the human brain is a marvelous computer in itself. It fills in those gaps, so multiple people can be talking, and it splits them out, and you don't hear the gaps.
So it's like daddy?
Well, the computer is very sensitive to that gap. It's like switching between each phone call very, very fast. And the computers are very sensitive to that and can get caught by that. Another possibility is call waiting. If you have call waiting
on your phone.
Okay, because that hangs up.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is call your phone company, ask them if you're on a SLIC or a shared phone line.
Okay.
And see if they can give you a dedicated wire.
Good luck.
Well, that can be a problem because of the density of the phone wires. Everyone's got cell phones and fax numbers now, and so the phone numbers are running out, and then the phone wires are running out. They'll probably offer to sell you a data line, which you don't actually need, but it may be your last resort if they can't give you a clean home phone line.
Right, and I'd be curious to know just one other thing. Is it... Are your work locations and your home locations separated by any geographic distance at all? Because that could tell you whether or not...
Yeah, 2 miles.
Well, a lot of times the business phone lines are usually a little higher quality.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
One test you could do is take the iMac to the shop and see what happens.
True.
Because you're using the same phone line. It's got a handle on it, so it's portable.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, semi-portable. It builds strong bodies 12 ways.
It's a transportable computer, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I complained with the ISP about it, and you know, but I figured other people in the same area, they'd be disconnected as well.
Yeah.
Often.
It depends on where the phone lines are split. It might be three houses on your street. It might be the house behind you on the next street over. That depends on how the phone company had to split the wires up.
Okay.
Could time of day and traffic volume have something to do with it, too?
It could also, yeah. If there's more, if you're on a shared phone line and no one else happens to be using it at the moment, then you're fine.
Uh-huh.
But if you know, like, all the kids get home from school and then get on the phone to their friends, then the phone traffic
is busier. It doesn't seem to make a difference. I could be late at night or even this morning, like at 10 o'clock it was happening. So.
Yeah. Mid-morning on a Saturday actually is a pretty heavy time for traffic. But if you're late in the evening after 8 o'clock, after primetime television goes on, I've found out that Internet connections even just hook up an awful lot faster than they did between 5 and 8 p.m.
Well, then I'll check with my phone company and see what happens then.
Right.
You know?
Line noise may have something to do with it. You got a particularly noisy line.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Okay, well, I hope we can help, and hope you managed to get some help from your phone company, too, on that. Thanks for calling, Becky. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, bye.
716-263-9994 is how you get on board on Sound Bites. We'll be happy to help you. I'm Bob Smith with Dave Enright and Steve Ray. Nick Francesco not with us today, but he should be back, we hope, next week at this same time as part of the team as well. And meanwhile, we go to Bill in the city of Rochester. And Bill, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Not bad.
Two questions. Pretty simple, probably, for you guys. when you turn your computer, you know, when it comes on, you get how do you make another folder? You know, if you want to make a folder with, you know...
On the desktop?
Yeah.
Just right-click on any blank area.
Okay.
And then you go down to where it says New.
Okay.
And one of them is Folder.
And just click on Folder,
yeah,
and that's it?
Yeah.
When you're in a window, you can go to the File menu, and there should also be a New Folder command.
Shazam. Okay, that one was simple. Now,
good.
The next one is, how do I clear out all the stuff that, you know, like when you, like www.nfl.com, you get all them in there?
Which browser are you using?
Internet Explorer.
In your Internet Preferences, there's a setting for your history and your cache. The history is how far back of addresses it remembers, and the cache is the file that it remembers it from. If you clear both of those items, then it will erase all that old history.
Okay, so you just go to, you said the file?
Right-click on the Internet icon on your desktop,
okay,
and that brings up your Internet properties, and it's in one of the tabs there.
Okay, that's it?
Yep.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
Hey, thanks very much for checking in, 716-263-9994. And we go next to Bill in Greece. Hi, Bill. You are on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for the call.
Our pleasure.
I have a read-write drive, on a CD drive on my computer with AdaptTac software. And what I want to use it for is backing up my hard drive. And I think I've got about 2.6 gig on the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about what's going to happen. It has this feature. It should just drag the file or the folder down.
Okay, here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
When people back up their hard drives, you know, I always tell them, don't worry about backing up the programs.
The program. Okay.
You know, you should have folders where you're saving all your data. In other words, any pictures that you want, any documentation that you've built up, any spreadsheets, and blah, 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 on and on. They should be in a separate folders from the programs.
Yeah.
You only have to worry about backing those up. Because if the hard drive crashes, 10 to 1 odds, it's usually a good time to clean things out, do a clean install, clean the old stuff out, and then just put your documents back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I've got
to
do...
And one CD will hold up to 650 meg of information.
Yeah, well, except when I formatted this thing, which took 40 minutes or so, it ended up saying it would 400 and something.
You have a 4X RW drive.
I probably do.
Yeah, 1X is 74 minutes, and then you calculate backwards.
I see. Okay.
But it should have had 650 megs.
Well, it says that on the cover of the CD case,
mm-hmm.
but it, after I formatted it, it said you have this much you can put on this.
That almost sounds like a bad disc if it blacked out 200 megs.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to format
it. No, it's the direct CD program that lets you access.
That's what I'm talking about. And it says it has to be formatted.
Right. It lets you access the CD as a floppy on your desktop and drag files back and forth.
Yeah, but you see,
eventually.
No, but you format it with Direct CD first.
Yeah.
Oh, see,
okay.
I've never had Easy Creator.
Well, Easy CD Creator is a mastering program that burns the data once you collect it.
Yeah.
The Direct CD program lets you drag it onto like a hard drive.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
It also will.
Cool.
If you set it for compression, it will do that, apparently, and that's what I did.
So I
figured I'd get more than that on, but I don't know. I'm still confused about how to drag and drop, say, my email stuff or all those, like your AutoExec files and your config files and the hidden files and the registry. Does that all sort of, do I not worry about that?
Like I said, my philosophy is, don't worry about those.
Don't worry about any of those.
Because if they go south on you,
mm-hmm.
the hard drive takes a trip and doesn't take you along with it. Then it's time to get a new hard drive. You format it fresh. You put a clean version of Windows in there. That way, you know, because most, in the average, most folks go, you know, a couple years, and they're putting programs on, taking mm-hmm. stuff off, and blah, blah, blah. And Windows is supposed to uninstall a lot of stuff, but it doesn't do the best job. So, you know, you wind up with a lot of this excess baggage there. And after time, it can slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually when I tell folks, okay, if you go for a new hard drive and you're starting out fresh, just back up your data and reinstall the programs that you want fresh.
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is back up your whole hard drive.
Yeah.
Because that makes it easier to restore.
That's
but the most convenient thing is to back up your data.
If I backed up my hard drive, what I would do is pick up the C icon and drag it down.
Well, that will work if your hard drive is only 650 megs.
But it will not. It won't just keep filling CDs if it isn't?
Most likely not.
No.
I'm not sure DirectCD will do that. What you need is a backup program like Backup Exec or Retrospect Express. That's designed to do your backups. The first time it runs, it backs up everything, and then you can tell it to just back up changed files.
Yeah. How about MS Backup? Will that do the job?
Actually, MS Backup isn't too bad. It's the MS Restore that doesn't work very well. So you have a really good backup that you can't restore.
That's an interesting contradiction.
Oh,
Drew, isn't it?
Yep.
It's been that way for a long time, though.
It keeps saying something about a .qic file, and I have the faintest idea what that is, but it seems...
Well, QIC is a tape drive.
Yeah, I know, and then everything on MS Backup refers you back to a tape drive, so I just wanted to...
Most backup programs were intended for tape drives,
right.
And it's only recently the CDRWs are becoming common for backup.
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay, I will approach it from that avenue then.
There you go.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for calling in, 716-263-9994. We go long distance again, this time to Ben in Covert, New York, down near Ithaca, listening to us again on our Geneva affiliate, WEOS-FM. And Ben, you're on the air with us.
Hi. We were running Windows 95, and my daughters were complaining we could not access a lot of websites. Just like one after another, they were closing out. So I finally determined that I had to upgrade to Windows 98. So I did. We could access.
The version of your operating system makes no difference. It might have been the version of the web browser you're using.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't change the web browser.
Mm. Well, 98 comes with IE 5.0, 5.0.1. Depends on what version of 98 you got.
Okay. Well, actually, that's not my question. But when we did upgrade to 98, and now when we shut down, we get two messages at the very tail end of the shutdown. One says MSGSRV32. And
messaging services.
I'm going to lose data. And then, and that's just a very generic, a white background with letters on it. And then there's a Windows message that follows it after I say, okay, that says it's an illegal operation. So I cancel that one. And then it shuts down just fine.
What's an illegal operation?
It uses the same upper left corner. It says MSGSRV32.
Did you get first edition or second edition of 98?
I don't know.
Because there's a bug in the first edition, the shutdown bug, where it prevents Windows 98 from shutting down properly. Then that's in the, where is that, MS config?
Yeah, you go into MS config, yeah. And in the very first tab, there's advanced, and it's there's a little checkbox there that you can say disable fast shutdown.
The second edition disables that automatically. Mm-hmm. But basically, Microsoft tried to make it shut down faster, and instead it won't shut down at all.
Yeah, it just hangs.
So they removed that option in second edition.
There is a patch up, though, on the Microsoft website for the shutdown issue.
But if I just change that one?
Try that. If that doesn't fix it, go up to the Microsoft website, and you can get the patch.
And in fact, with 98, there's the smart update command in your start menu that looks out on Microsoft's website to see any updates you may need for your operating system.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, thank you very much for calling in, 716-263-9994. And let's go on the car phone next. That's going to be Harold in the city of Rochester. Hi, Harold.
Hello. How you doing?
Great.
Listen, I have a question for you about Windows 98 Second Edition. I have an HP Vectra that has an AGP graphics board or graphics chipset on the motherboard. That's a Matrox G200. And unfortunately, what I want to do is have multi-monitor support under Windows 98, and I only have PCI slots available. If you look at Windows and information on the Microsoft website, they provide a number of cards that seem to be able to do this, but you'd have to put in two separate PCI cards. Matrox makes a board that I think it's the GS400 or something like that, that does have multi-monitor support under PCI.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, am I going to be able to put a board like that in, or can I put in a couple of less expensive boards that'll do the job, and will it conflict with the onboard Matrox chipset?
You've got onboard video?
Onboard, unfortunately. It's an onboard ACT chipset.
Then you should, in the BIOS, be able to disable that.
You can make it boot to a PCI. That's correct.
All right, then just put your disable that. Put your PCI video card in there, and you should be all set.
Now, would you recommend go? I mean, the Matrox board is a fairly expensive kind of thing. It's like $500 bucks for a multi-monitor support board.
Well, that might be the board that supports multiple monitors on one board.
Right.
Matrox makes a couple that drive two monitors with one card.
That's correct. But is there any reason to do that? I mean, obviously, there's far less expensive PCI cards.
Well,
you have experience with particular PCI cards that are going to work as a pair.
One, if I remember correctly, though, that Matrox board,
mm-hmm.
trying to find it is an issue.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, the big issue there is it's only one slot to drive multiple monitors. If you have a lot of other slots.
Well, I have access slots. I'm not hurting for slots. I'm just wondering what the most cost-effective and efficient way to do this is.
Well, I was just trying. I was helping another client out because he was a day trader,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to do up to six monitors.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to find those Matrox. What was it? 200?
I think it's a 400. It's an MMS board. It also has a quad support. There's a quad support version.
Yeah. Good luck in trying to find them.
That's why I'd love to buy something off the shelf if you guys knew that a pair of, you know, say, ATI boards or somebody else's boards does work under multi-monitor because the Microsoft site is fairly cryptic and it says...
You might have to go to the website for the video manufacturer. Check with ATI, with Matrox.
And I've done that. There's not a lot of information there.
Well, wait a minute. Let's step back for a second. What package are you going to be running this with?
What do you mean, what package? All I want to do is run two Windows-based programs, one on one monitor and one on another. It's actually for a medical application, and they're just standard apps. There's nothing funny about them. It's just that I need to have two separate video boards to do it.
Okay, because there is a couple other boards. Like I say, trying to find the Matrox would be kind of hard right now, but I've looked into it. But there was another spot, and if you give my shop a call on Monday afternoon, I might be able to locate that for you, steer you to another recommendation that we know will work.
Okay.
I would imagine that the packaging might even say works with Windows 98 dual monitor.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's your shop number?
It's NRIPC Management at 442-4843.
4843. All right. Well, I knew it was a sticky question, and you guys might be able to get to the bottom of it. So thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks very much for calling in. 716-263-9994. If you're on the line, stay with us, because we're going to be right back with more of your calls in just a minute as soon as we reach into the Internet mailbag on Soundbites. Listen. listening to Soundbites on WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, and live on the World Wide Web at www.soundbites.org. And we will be back within the next week or two on City Cable 12 and on big TV channels 40 and 26 as well. Bob Smith, along with Dave Enright and Steve Ray, answering all your questions most of the time on the phone at 716-263-9994, but also on the internet at soundbites@netac.net or at our website, www.soundbites.org. And the internet mailbag letters of the week begin with this one from Aaron in Rochester. Bob, I'm hoping that this one will be the question pulled from your email bag on Saturday.
Sorry, it wasn't. Next question.
No. We won't hurt Aaron like that. He's in trouble. Here's the story. I turn on my computer, a P2 450 megahertz. It only boots to the CMOS screen. No matter what I do, that's all I get. Is the hard drive gone? Have you got any other thoughts? Pretty new machine to have the hard drive gone, but
take it back. Wherever he got it from, take it back.
It should go past CMOS, and if it can't find the hard drive, you should get an operating system not found error.
Yeah. No, don't even mess with it, because if you start playing around with it, popping that case off, trying to check seatings and everything else, you might void the warranty. So box it up and take it back.
Because this baby is...
Yeah, it's got some problems.
It's toasting. Okay. Now, another one from Reginald here in the Rochester area. An intranet problem involving some Macs. And Reg says, hi, guys. I got a problem that started out as a once-in-a-while thing, slowly developed into an every-time-I-boot problem. I'm using Roadrunner. I have a G4 Mac and a PowerTower clone linked together with a Linksys hub. I'm paying extra for an additional IP address. The G4 increasingly can't find the server when first booted up. I have to disable TCP ISP, wait a minute, and then re-enable it. Pain in the neck. Didn't used to do that, at least not nearly as often. The power tower does it once in a while, too. What's wrong?
There have been problems with Roadrunner's DHCP server recently, trying to assign addresses. And I read a lot of messages in the Roadrunner news groups about people with multiple addresses having problems with their second address. If he turns the G4 on first and it never finds an address, that would be a different issue. If it's the second computer turning on, not finding the address, it could be Roadrunner. One of the easiest things to try is to delete the TCP preferences and rebuild TCP. But the machine should see the Roadrunner server right off the bat. Otherwise, I'd probably check with Roadrunner to see if they're having problems with their second IP address.
So it could be their fault at their end. Okay, well, we hope that helps. And meanwhile, we want to remind you, of course, that if you've got a question that we can answer, write it to us, soundbites@netac.net, or through our website, www.soundbites.org. Now, just before we get back to the phones, we'll take a quick look at our interactive polls for last week and this week on our website, www.soundbites.org. First of all, our poll topic, which closed this Friday night, and unlike a lot of situations, once the polls closed, we got quick results for you. And this one asked you, I want a handheld computer for Christmas. No, not interested at all. No, already got one. Yes, don't have one. Or yes, want a sexier one. Here's how it shook out. Over 57% said, no, I'm not interested at all. 22.6% said, no, I don't. Yes, I would like one, but I don't have one. 16% of you said, no, I've already got one, so I'm not interested in one. And 4% said, yes, I've got one, but I'd like a sexier one. And our thanks to 150 folks who voted in that last poll. Now, this week's poll asks you if you'd like a DVD drive for your computer for Christmas. We've got 31 votes in so far already since we opened up the polls this morning. Nice turnout so far. And 64.5% of you say you're not interested. 16% say, no, I already got one. 12% say, almost 13 say, yeah, I'd like one, I don't have one yet. And 3.2% say, yes, I've already got one, but I'd like a sexier one. I didn't know if there were sexier ones out there yet. I've always thought a DVD drive is a DVD drive.
Yeah, but you can
the
get
10Xs are now, aren't they?
Yeah, you can get DVDs with CD burners in them.
Yeah, that's the sexy new thing. Was it Panasonic and Toshiba have CDRW DVD-ROM combo drives? So now you don't have to buy two. But this kind of goes along with one of the news stories we had last night that Gateway's stock price took a hit when they announced lower earnings. Gateway and Compaq and Apple both have high inventory. Computer sales are kind of slumping off a little bit, even though they were, you know, companies are getting ready for Christmas. And it's mostly peripherals that are selling this year. Anything you plug into the computer. So last year everybody bought new computers. This year they're buying peripherals.
And then next year they'll be buying new computers again.
Right.
Right.
So, which will have newer peripherals.
Exactly. So here we go again. Anyway.
Yep.
So we
keep you around.
It's around and around. Never stops, which of course is one reason why we keep on going here on Soundbites. And that is the news. And that is our look at our poll for this week. So let's get back to the phones as Soundbites continues. (216) 263-9994 gets you on board Soundbites. Tom in the city, you're next.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. I have Outlook 98, and I'd like to replace it.
So would a lot of folks.
Yeah.
Should.
It's time. So I wonder, can you recommend another application?
Eudora.
For just email or also for calendaring and scheduling?
Yeah, calendar, contacts, and email.
The Palm Desktop is actually a very nice calendaring program, even if you're not using a Palm to synchronize it with.
Okay.
Cool. I think that's a free download from Palm.
Okay. Well,
Netscape also has the new calendaring online.
I use IE right now, too, but 5.
Okay.
I think AOL just added the My Calendar feature.
Yeah.
What's that quick and easy data contact manager that Nick always likes? A shareware program that Paul outed for years.
I can't remember it. Yeah.
There's always ACT from Symantec. That's a big common one.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar
with
that.
But you might be able to find some just online some utilities if you're just looking for a contact manager, that type of stuff. But if you want to do a different place for your email, Eudora, you can get that free.
Okay.
And that's not, you know, as susceptible to viruses like, let's see, one particular program that comes to mind. Oh, Outlook.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, okay. There's a number of options out there. There's, again, a number of different calendaring programs that you can get just off the Internet free of charge.
Okay. The other question is, I downloaded Real Player version 8, and I've gone through this twice now, but after I rebooted, I have Windows 95. After I reboot, I get a Windows protection error, restart computer. So it's something related to that.
Uh-huh.
I went into safe mode, uninstalled Real Player, ran scan disk, but I still get the same message.
Real Player is an evil abomination on the earth?
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
And even though...
Are you sure that 8 is compatible with 95?
I'm not sure.
Because they may have written it for 98.
I would say that I've been through this twice, so I would say that it's definitely not.
And 10 to 1 ads, the registry
is corrupt.
Still inundated with it.
It may have corrupted your registry, yeah.
Even though uninstaller says it gets rid of it.
Yeah, it doesn't. I know it doesn't. I checked
it's
fine. It's
a
not.
Lie.
It's there. Yeah.
So if you're comfortable with editing your registry,
yeah,
go through and look for Real Player.
Okay.
And delete any incidences of it. Back it up.
Yeah.
Back the registry up. But then go in and edit it and look for any incidents of Real Player and delete them.
Okay. Thank
Even
you
the folders.
Okay, I will. Thanks very much.
You're
hey,
welcome. Thanks very much. I wonder if he reinstalled another earlier version of Real Audio, like 7.
Not until he gets rid of the older one first.
But he can do that afterward.
It's like an onion. You
I know a lot
keep
of people
peeling away at it to get these layers out.
I know a lot of people that still stuck with 5. That was the last most stable version.
Yeah, that's the one I've stayed with.
5 is okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there are some radio station sites, especially, that don't work with any version earlier than 7.
Netscape 6, I'm using that right now. And trying to go to some of these other sites with the older versions of Internet Explorer and that 4 and 5, say, oh, sorry, I can't display it, but hopefully they'll be updating their site. So I got to shut down the Netscape and start up Internet Explorer to view that particular site, because it comes right up on the screen and says,
yeah.
Yep.
By the way, incidentally, this station supports everything from 5 on up, so you don't have to upgrade to the latest and greatest of Real Player to hear what we're doing here.
That's kind of the double-edged sword of web development. You go with the latest, coolest, snazziest thing that no one can watch, or you go with the old, boring standards that everyone can watch.
If you're looking for audience, you take the latter course. And by the way, we also support QuickTime. 716-263-9994. Soundbites. I'm Bob Smith with Dave Enright and Steve Ray. This week answering your questions. And next we're going to answer a question from Stan, long distance in Geneva, New York, listening to us again on WEOS. Hi, Stan.
Hi, how are you? Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Got a couple questions. I hope you can answer them. Microsoft Word. I hope that doesn't send fear through you.
It depends if you use them.
NG, next question.
Okay, all right, here's my problem question. Okay, I'm a college professor, and I do a lot of writing, long papers and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm doing cut and paste, and let's suppose I've got several paragraphs that I want to cut and move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I click on the first part of the paragraph, try to scroll down to the end of it, zoom, I go right to the end of the whole document. Back, I go to the beginning of the document. It is the most frustrating thing because it scrolls too fast.
You want to slow down.
I want to slow down the highlight mode.
What you can do is it's in the mouse.
You can turn down your mouse sensitivity, too.
Your scrolling features within the mouse, you can slow those down.
Yeah, the big trick, and it takes a lot of practice, is that don't move the mouse so far to the bottom of the screen. It's like a 1 or 2 pixel margin where it scrolls really slow, and a couple of pixels of mouse movement later, it scrolls too fast.
Okay, but you say I can perhaps control some of that if I go into the mouse
settings? Yeah, go into the mouse sensitivity settings.
Okay, because it's horribly frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You can also use some of the keyboard shortcuts. Control down arrow should select the entire paragraph. Control down arrow moves a paragraph. Shift control down arrow selects a paragraph.
Oh, so I could just jump paragraph to paragraph.
Right. And if you, it's either a double click or a triple click in the left margin when the cursor points the other way.
Yeah.
Will highlight the entire paragraph.
You say you do a lot of typing?
A lot of writing, long papers and things like that.
You know what you might want to try?
What?
Naturally speaking.
Naturally speaking. Hmm.
That is a dictation system.
Oh, L&H just filed for bankruptcy last week.
Oh, really?
Well, that's good.
Well, there's another one called ViaVoice.
From IBM,
Which ViaVoice is another one where you put on a headset and you literally talk into it, and it types as you go along.
Yeah, and IBM is not going away.
Well, L&H had some very cool software for interacting with dictation, and then Dragon had the continuous recognition algorithms. So when L&H bought Dragon last year, we were really excited about combining those two technologies. Now L&H has filed for protection from creditors. Hopefully they'll be back, but for the time being,
well, the product
are up
still
in the
works
air.
Good. Naturally speaking, though, is I've set it up for a number of clients. And,
real big in the medical and legal profession.
Oh, so you can just dictate directly.
Oh, yeah. It types right on screen.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I'd look into that because, like I say, I think it's going to be around for a good while because, especially for visually impaired and handicapped folks, it's been a life savings for some of those. I mean, I've got a couple folks that their limitations just prevent them from doing a lot of typing because of hand problems. And this program has opened up a whole world for them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. It's one of the coolest projects because they can sit there and talk to the computer, you know, just like on 2001 Space Odyssey. You know, tell it to open up this particular program, print it, you know, change
page. It types what I say.
Yeah.
The IBM
Oh, my gosh.
You might want to look into it. You had another question?
Yes, I did. It's not related to Word. My parents are in their 80s and have finally decided they want to jump into the technological, you know, onto the internet and so forth. Now, as a kind of a forward to this, they're the kind of people who their VCR blinks 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
They can't deal with technology. Yeah. On a good day, they can kind of do with it. What is the easiest computer that they could get where they could push a button and be on the web and not
web
have to
TV.
If just the internet, something like web TV or the iPac or what's the other one? Someone else has just released a new an internet only computer.
Okay, now what if they wanted a computer that actually, what I'm thinking of now is that some of these voice-activated things wouldn't be bad. Is there a machine that's pretty user-friendly and doesn't require a rocket scientist?
But see, even the speaking ones, you've got to train them. If all they want to do is email and surf the web and not have to worry about viruses and all this other stuff, let them try out web TV.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Web TV, they can sit there and do, you know, their emails and type and surf the web.
I'd almost recommend looking at an iMac if you want to get a a general purpose computer
that's a
little easier to use, a little easier to fix when something goes wrong. So for technologically phobic people, it's a little easier than a Windows machine.
Yeah, that would be
especially the setting it up. You pull it out of the box and plug it in. You don't have to worry about all the cords.
Well, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck, Stan.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling in. We go next to Bob in Irondequoit. Bob, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you, gentlemen. Excellent show.
Thank you.
I got a couple quick questions for you here. I bought a digital camera, and I have a photo deluxe program that come with the camera kit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when I go to email a picture to one of my friends or something, it seems like it sends the whole Adobe program. You know, what
are you
doing wrong?
Are you sure you're dragging just the picture into the email?
No, I'm not absolutely sure of anything.
What's the name of the file that you're sending?
I go into document, okay, and then I go into my documents, and then I got a folder in there called pictures,
mm-hmm.
and all my pictures are in there. And then if I go and I open one of them pictures, and then I send it, it seems like it sends the whole Adobe program, because I've gone to my email and I've checked the inbox and the sent, and when I check my sent messages, the whole Adobe program pops off. But not only that, but when I'm sending it, it takes like 15 minutes to send it.
Well, that could be possible if you have a big picture.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, a meg or two.
But if you're just going into your email and you click on, you know, you type the message and then you say, click on attachments, and then you go into your photo folder and just select the one picture.
It's usually something like picture.jpg.
Yeah, and just select that one picture and then click on the send.
Okay.
It should just send that one picture.
Okay, that JPEG,
mm-hmm.
I think, has something to do with it. I know I found that the other day by accident, and it's got a bunch of different settings in that little box it was in.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that was highlighted on mine was the Photo Deluxe 3.0.
Right. Yeah, so, that's the file format it's saving in, so the person at the other end has to have Photo Deluxe to read it.
Okay.
If you save it as a JPEG file, then they can use any graphic program to view it with.
So change that to the JPEG.
Right. Mm-hmm. There are.
Probably is going to solve that a little bit.
Yeah.
It can, because JPEG is also a compression format that will make the file smaller.
Okay.
You have an option on how much you want to compress it.
Excellent.
The more you compress it, the worse the image becomes.
Okay.
So most people kind of stick in a medium compression, so it's pretty small but pretty good quality.
Okay. Excellent. One other quick one. I use Netscape when I first start up my computer and I get online, I go to Netscape, and it keeps giving me a JavaScript error.
What version of Netscape are you running?
I don't know. I thought I tried to update it, but I...
Definitely want to go to at least 4.75.
4.75?
Correct.
Yeah, if you're running one of the older 4.0s, a site you're going to is maybe trying to use a newer Java command that your machine doesn't know because it's an older version.
Okay, I got pretty much I got a Pentium 3 650.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you go to Netscape,
how much memory?
Pardon?
How much memory?
Is it 17 or 128?
Okay, 128.
Yeah, 128.
If you go to Netscape's homepage, there's a button on the left that says Smart Update.
Okay.
Where it will look to see what you're running and download what it needs to update it.
For new users, though, if it sounds like you are, I wouldn't recommend 6.0 quite yet.
Okay.
Yeah, stick to the 4.0s.
Take the 4.7.
The 4.7.
4.75.
Yeah.
I think it's the most recent.
Maybe I think there might be a 4.76.
Could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
The mystery of whatever happened to version 5, well, version 5 never saw the light of day, I guess, except in beta. Didn't
well, version right. 5, there's two theories. Netscape was working on a public open source browser called Mozilla based on the open source code. Plus, Internet Explorer is at version 5. So if Netscape comes out with 6, it must be better because it's got a bigger number.
And see,
marketing. So it's really 5, but they call it 6.
And no, and they're still following the Enright law.
Which is?
Remember, what good version of Netscape is currently being used? 4.75,
odd
number.
Yep.
Beta 3 of 6. Even though it's Netscape 6, it's beta 3 That was the final release. So they like to stick to the odd numbers, folks.
Right.
And five, you know, probably would have been to 50 if they hit that one, you know, right on the money. That wouldn't have worked, so, you know, because it's an even number.
Well, they could have always called it 5.01 or something like that. But, you know.
Two odd numbers, no. They cancel each other out to
be
an even number.
Two odd numbers added together add up to an even, don't they?
You got it.
Oh, wow. See, I guess we have to master the subtleties of these things. 716-263-9994 on Soundbites, WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, and on the web at www.soundbites.org. Bob Smith with Dave Enright and Steve Ray. And, of course, if you're listening to us on our master control station, WXXI AM 1370, right after this broadcast at 2 o'clock this afternoon, a special Talk of the Nation with Juan Williams from Tallahassee, Florida. Where all the action from the pregnant chads to the lawyers is unfolding for you in presidential election.
But there's only 9 days left, right? They have to send their list of electorates by the 12th?
Yeah, but this is the election that never ends,
yeah.
Trust me. 716-263-9994.
Let's just let Clinton stay another term while they sort it out.
Well, somebody suggested that. I don't think it's legal at this point. Let's go to Walt Webster. Hi, Walt.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Internet, or not Internet, but the Explorer program in Windows 98.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the view selections, I can get it, the large icons, the small icons, and the list, but in details, I lose all the data there. And I can go back to list, and I can right-click, and under properties, it's all there, the particulars about the file, you know. But in details, there's nothing there.
Completely empty?
Yeah, it's empty. I mean, you can still, on the left-hand side, see the folders, but there's no data in the right-hand side of the screen.
That might be a bad font.
Yeah.
A bad what?
A bad font.
Well,
can't display the font.
I think I brought this on myself. I loaded scanner software, and a font manager was included in that, and that's when the problem occurred.
Bingo.
So what am I looking at? A reload of the operating system?
First thing is to try to uninstall that font manager,
yeah.
If not the entire scanner program.
It's on now, but it didn't do any good. It's still not, the details,
the
thing is still going.
The font's still there.
Yeah.
What you can do is, if you have...
You said you're running 98?
Yes, Windows 98.
Run the file system checker.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Start programs, accessories, system tools.
Okay.
There's a system information menu and a system file checker command.
Uh-huh. And I'm looking for an anomaly in there?
Well, just let it scan your system file, and it sees if there's any files that need to be recovered, anything corrupt or missing.
Or damaged.
Yeah, well.
That should help you. That should help you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you very much for calling in. Dan in Pittsburgh, you're next. Hi, Dan.
Wow, I just barely made it on, it looks like.
No, you got a time.
Okay.
Got a few.
Question. How do I make Windows 98 Second Edition forget about a login?
What are you trying to do? So it won't ask you for a password?
Yeah. Well, both things.
All right, there's two things that you can do. Is if you connect it to a network?
No.
Okay, then all you got to do is go into the control panel. And under the control panel, there's network. Under network, change it from, it's probably set for Microsoft Network Client. Change it to either Family Logon or just Windows Logon.
Okay, I tried both of those.
And then what you want to do is select one of those. Just say Windows Logon.
Yeah.
Then what you want to do is if you go back to the Start button and say Find, and look for a file with the extension PWL. And delete the password list.
Okay.
And you should be all set.
And then the next time you boot, when it asks you for a username and password, just hit enter. Enter no username and password.
And then you'll never see it again.
Great. I had a situation where I had a previous login by the same name on the machine. I could not remember the password.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't let me create it again, of course.
Yeah. You can delete that, and then you can also...
So this PWL, I can...
delete that. Now, there's one other thing that you might want to do to really clean it out.
Yep.
Is if you go to run and type sysedit, and then if you look at the system.ini file, you scroll down to the bottom of that, and you'll see passwords. And there's a list of all these passwords underneath. It says in brackets, password, and you see all these different names. You can highlight all those below the brackets and password and delete those, too.
Okay. And we thank you very much, Dan. Good luck. And we have time for at least one more call from Paul on Irondequoit. Hi, Paul.
Hi. When I'm making a worksheet in Excel, let's say I want to use the same name in the first column several times. It doesn't remember it.
Whoops. What do you mean it doesn't remember it?
Let's say the first column I'm going to use your name on five different days, like I went to your house or something.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first column, it doesn't remember the name. In other words...
Well, it doesn't remember anything. You have to type in the name.
Right, right. First I put in a name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then every time after that I would put in, like, your name, it would automatically...
Oh, yeah, the auto... What is it? Auto type.
Auto type.
Yeah, I think that's the name of the command. So it remembers what you've typed before, so you don't have to type the whole thing again. I think it's called the auto type or auto correct.
Yeah, and you can set those up so that you can go into that feature.
It may be turned off completely.
Yeah, and you might want to look at it, and then you can also set it up for various shortcuts. So if you're typing in a big company name, and you only want to put in two unique letters, so it'll convert that to the long name.
Yeah, I think that's in the tools menu. It might be turned off completely.
Right. Yep, check that out.
Got about 90 seconds to deal quickly with Peter at the city. Hi, Peter.
Hi, one of my friends, he's not very smart, and so he always ends up making my computer freeze.
Uh-huh.
So we got to shut it off kind of frequently. And if I'm not supervising it, he always like tries to skip through scan disk. And I'm not totally sure if it has anything to do with it, but one time it came up and it gave me a message about a sound driver, and then anytime I'm playing like a game or something,
mm-hmm.
it gives me a message saying that the sound driver cannot be found.
You and might want to check.
No it. Sound work.
Yeah. What you might want to do, you're running Windows 98?
Yeah. I went on something that was, it said it would go online and check for other drivers that could replace it or something,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't work at all.
You might have to install it again so you can uninstall it, which removes, well, try the uninstall first to remove the corrupt driver. And then install it again to put the an uncorrupted driver back in. But if he tends to skip through ScanDisk, you might want to run that in thorough mode at least once just to be sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I wish there was a way to prevent it from exiting ScanDisk.
Yeah, I know.
That's just, why would they?
It should come out and slap you on the hands, you know, right across the keyboard.
That's what I do.
Well, it's frustrating when you're crashing a lot, and every time you boot, I don't want to do that again.
Well, you know, the
you need to, yeah.
Put a password in the BIOS so he can't even get into the machine.
Right.
There
hey,
you go.
Hey, there you go. Do thank you very much. Wish we had time for more calls. Unfortunately, we do not. We have time only to say thank you to our experts, Dave Enright and Steve Ray. And thanks to John Andrus behind the control board, keeping us sounding good. Thank you all for being with us in this edition of Sound Bites. A reminder again, coming up next on our Master Control Station, WXXI AM, special Talk of the Nation broadcast from Tallahassee, Florida on, guess what, the election. And, of course, we will be back next week at this same time. I'm Bob Smith, CN7, for the next Sound Bites.